You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Yes, this day in history for this week takes us back to 1953 and the death of Soviet Premier Joseph Stalin. Born Yosef Zhugashvili in what was then the Russian Empire, he would become part of the Bolshevik faction of the Russian Social Democratic Labour Party, which took power in the 1917 October Revolution. This was followed by a civil war in which foreign powers such as America sent troops to bolster the anti-Bolshevik white armies.
It's 1917. And from San Francisco, American troops set sail for Siberia to reinforce Tsarist troops fighting steadily losing civil war with Bolshevist insurgents. Even in 1917, Red Menace took armed Americans across the Pacific to fight a war. With seasoned troops goes large shipment of arms, for internal struggle in Russia and Siberia looked like long affair in 1917, though no one was betting on the Bolshevists to win. With brother doughboys busy with a fight in France, these fellows went off to war in the frozen wastes of Siberia. Several years later, same troops come home on transport Mazakaska with not much war behind them. Instead, they return with their Russian war brides and half-Russian children. The Reds won Russia and Siberia from the Tsar, but these Russians won happiness and the hearts of American men.
During the war, Stalin's predecessor, Vladimir Lenin, grew increasingly unwell, having been wounded in a 1918 assassination attempt, and finally died in 1924. In the aftermath, various factions of the party competed for power, with Stalin eventually rising to the top. Under his leadership, the Soviet Union would embark on a program of show trials and rapid industrialization.
Grim, uncompromising audience is assembled in Moscow in what used to be a club for Russian aristocrats as a court solemnly convenes to try for treason eight intellectuals, engineers and professors, at least one of them with an international reputation. They are accused of plotting against the Soviets in the employ of bourgeois enemies of the socialistic state. The penalty for the crime, death. A deep hush settles over this strange assemblage in this strange setting as the clerk reads the indictment. These are the most damning accusations ever brought against influential members of the Soviet Union. The court calls upon the accused to answer, and one by one, they step forward. Every word spoken in the courtroom goes into the radio microphones, as this trial is to receive the greatest publicity of any proceeding of its kind ever held in any country. The people of Moscow are aroused to a fever pitch of excitement by what they believe to be a world plot against their state. They parade the streets in seemingly never-ending throngs, as loudspeakers bring them the progress of the trial from within the courtroom. Far into the night, the crowds swarm the thoroughfares, bearing banners denouncing the traitors and their bourgeois employers. The excitement lasted for days, but subsided before the end of the trial. All of the accused were found guilty and condemned to death. This sentence was later commuted to 10 years imprisonment, and the great trial passed into history. But all those from the outside world who were permitted to witness this weird spectacle will never forget it.
Deep in the heart of the Ural, one of the world's largest coal byproduct plants has been built, and a vast city of steel and iron has arisen. The giant ovens out of which the burning coke is pouring into this train were constructed in 67 days. No mean feat. Into the water spraying plant now to extinguish the blaze, leaving just the coke and the steam. For over 1,400 miles, this great river, one of the longest in Europe, flows through Russia. And today, they are at last putting the finishing touches to one of the world's largest dams. Nearly 750,000 cubic yards of concrete have gone to the creation of this gigantic hydropower project, the work of years of intense labor and ceaseless activity. The old rapids have gone, and the river level has risen 100 feet, but cheap power for hundreds of square miles is expected when the full load of 810,000 horsepower is drawn from these mighty cataracts, harnessed for the use of man at last.
That was part one of This Day in History. Part two will continue after the break.
The Auckland Arts Festival brings you the Festival Playground at Silo Park, a resplendent new space for music, art, food and family fun. March 15th at Festival Playground, Aldous Harding and Perfume Genius, lush, electrifying and transcendent. Aldous Harding and Perfume Genius are artistic kindred spirits playing individually and together for one beautiful and poignant night. Auckland Arts Festival's Festival Playground, March 8th to the 25th. For information, go to aucklandfestival.co.nz.
Have at you, Trixie Wirtlewind!
Yield!
Hrothgar, you devil, by the cleansing light of Sarah, I summon!
Hey, Terry, wait, stop! We agreed that Sarah was the guiding deity of my clan?
Screw you, dickweed, you guys are OPS! We need Sarah!
Well, let's just all have bloody Sarah then! How about that? I'm cutting the baby in half!
With a little something for everyone, Sarah is the guiding light on your Saturday afternoon. The Saturday 2 to 4 with Sarah, only on 95BFM.
We now return to This Day in History. When we left off, Stalin was consolidating his power in the Soviet Union. Although the country had always had hostile relations with foreign powers, these were briefly shelved during World War II, with the Western Allies working with Stalin's Russia against Hitler's Germany.
Over the sawtoothed and snow-capped peaks of the Hamadan and Iraqi mountains to Tehran, the route flown by the British and United States leaders and their staffs to meet the Soviet delegates in the drafting of the plan for victory. The start of the four-day conference in the Persian capital, which, in effect, signs the death warrant of Nazi Germany. Impressive security measures have been taken for this critical and most momentous conference, which will shape the destiny of mankind. The compounds of the British legation and the Soviet embassy in Tehran were converted for the occasion into one great park. The ends of the street were sealed and closely guarded. It was at the Soviet embassy that one of the most moving ceremonies of the war took place. Marshal Stalin received the Stalingrad sword from Mr. Churchill, the magnificent token of British admiration for Russian courage, fashioned at the command of His Majesty the King. British Lieutenant, acting as sword-bearer, steps forward to present the Sword of Honour into the hands of the Prime Minister.
After the fall of the Nazi threat, relations between the former allies would again deteriorate. By this point, Stalin was in his late 60s, and the various factions of the party began to plan for the eventual power vacuum.
From behind Moscow's impenetrable Kremlin wall, a new mystery. For many months, the world has listened to news of changes at the highest levels of the Russian state. Climax came in Moscow's Red Square, where the vast might of the Soviet Union paraded for the November anniversary of the Revolution of 1917, at which the rule of the Soviets was born. At these parades, with one exception in 20 years, the central figure has been iron-willed, all-powerful Joseph Stalin. Standing on Lenin's red granite tomb, November the 7th has been Stalin's Day. This year, the West waited, and waited in vain. Stalin did not appear. Rumors of his illness or impending retirement found new confirmation. At 67, Stalin is ill and aging. Around him are eight resolute men. One of them will be Russia's future ruler. Will it be Molotov, Kaganovich, Stanov, Andreev, Mikoyan, or Voznesensky? To these the world looked. To Russians, the heir apparent is Police Chief Beria or Party Leader Malenkov. In the cities of Russia, this is the great question of the future. Who will succeed Stalin to rule over Russia's 200 million citizens? For 23 years, Joseph Stalin has been the voice of Russia. At his health resort in Sochi by the Caspian Sea, except for written pronouncements delivered in his name, he is silent. From the Kremlin, the mystery deepens.
Moscow heads the communist world in mourning the passing of Joseph Stalin. From a saluting base on Lenin's tomb, he reviewed each year on Red Army Day men of the Soviet armed forces. Army, Navy, and Air Force, all had been fostered by Stalin himself. Until now, they have become one of the greatest military powers in the world. His people regarded as a god this man who was born the son of a shoemaker, for above all, he became a star to guide them to a more prosperous way of life. In return, they gave him their undying devotion and accepted his every word as law. But one thing Stalin did not give them, their freedom. And that, to countries outside the Iron Curtain, means all. Over the years, Soviet propaganda built up a picture of Stalin as a kindly man who loved his people. Yet when Lenin died, it was he who destroyed those same people, it is believed nearly 7 million of them, to make his position secure as Russia's dictator. And through the 30 years of his rule, he remained unchallenged even by members of the Supreme Council, the Soviet's administrative machine. Of this body, Stalin was the chairman and held the reins so tightly that no decision could be taken without his approval. Thus, none could contest the power he held over 200 million Russian people. Then in the last war, Russia took arms against Nazi Germany and the Grand Alliance was formed. At Yalta, following the collapse of the enemy, the big three met, Churchill, Roosevelt and Stalin, to plan for peace. But Stalin abused the privileges that victory won him, and still world peace is threatened by his policy of communist domination. Russia herself has known fear in post-war days. 9 Jewish doctors were accused of murdering Zhdanov, once believed to be Stalin's successor. Now Molotov, chief of secret police Beria, and Stalin's right-hand man Malenkov are among those tipped as Russia's new ruler. Malenkov, reports indicate, seems the most likely to follow in the steps of his master, probably by methods similar to those adopted by Stalin himself, who had all his rivals liquidated to establish his initial power. Anxiously, the world waits for the name of the new Soviet dictator. Whoever shall occupy the Kremlin follows a man of genius. Yet he was not wholly a great man, for he lacked humanity and the will for peace, the essentials for everlasting greatness.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.